The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
A new book called Who Killed Una Linsky delves into the real-life cold case of Una Linsky, a young woman who went missing in October of 1971. The book covers the days and moments leading up to her death, the questions that remain, and the culture of policing in agrarian Ireland, a society very different to our own one in 2024, even though the area in which this took place is now very much, I suppose, part of the greater Dublin area rather than being remote countryside. Mick Clifford is the author of the book and he joins me now. Mick, good morning and welcome.
Thanks, Pat. Morning.
It's a fantastic book and you managed to get a hold of court transcripts and so on. So we have a real sense of the evidence given at trial by the various parties. Was it difficult to get a hold of that stuff?
It took a bit of work and I was also helped. I got a big file from the late Billy Flynn, who's a private investigator. His daughter Jackie and son Patrick were very good and they assisted me in that respect. And then you had to get stuff from the court service and all. Just a very brief anecdote about it. There's one guy in it, Sean Riley, he's one of the main witnesses, and Sean was there. I'd read into this extensively and Sean was on the lane on the day that Una Linsky disappeared and he tore across on his racer. He got in home, he read the newspaper, he went out to meet his buddy. Like all 22-year-olds, you know, you're planning for the weekend. And anyway, I went out to meet Sean and he walked into the room and here was a 75-year-old man. And I said, Sean, geez, in my mind, you're this young fella tearing around in your racer. You got a kick out of that. But you become immersed in it to a point where you have an idea what people are. You actually try and go back into the past at the time.
Now, the young woman involved, she worked for the Land Commission. She was, in her teens? Still.
19, yeah.
Yeah. And she worked in the Land Commission, her first job, and she used to get the bus every day to and from her home in what was agrarian County Dublin.
Very much so. There were most of the people there, including Una Linsky's family, are displaced from the west. They came across, ironically, Una worked in the Land Commission. They all came across from Belmullet area under a Land Commission programme in 1940.
But they weren't necessarily welcomed.
At the time, not at all. And that was even brought up in the Dáil. You had a local TD in Meath giving out about them. And you had hassle there. You had some skirmishes between the local people and the people who came in. Now, over time, quite obviously, Ted Neal, I think it was, he was a TD. His family had come across and he spoke eloquently about how it had evolved over the time from the 40s right through to the 80s that they became effectively there. But one of the people, for instance, Martin Conmee, who sent it, his sister Mary said to me when she first went to school, she was amazed that everybody's parents wasn't from Mayo. She thought that's just the way things were. Yeah. So it shows you that they were immersed in that community where they were all from the West.
So the simple story is, and she had a boyfriend and she thought he was going to break up with her. Then they mended their fences and, but the finger of suspicion might have been pointed at him straight away when she went missing, that she might have run off to London with him or done something like that. But she goes to work in the morning, no problem. Then she gets the bus home with her cousin Anne, as she did every day. And then they part company at the bus stop. And she's never seen again.
She's never seen again. Normally, the walk would take her about 15 minutes across Porterstown Lane. And that side of Porterstown Lane from where the bus dropped her to her home, at the time, there were no houses there. They were all on the far side. So, you know, you could say it was lonely, but we're talking 1971, Pat.
And she felt safe.
Absolutely. Nobody would have thought at that time. But as you say, she never arrived. Then her mother notices this within 15, 20 minutes, sends off to Anne's house, her cousin's house, no sign of her. There's a search begun and that kicked off the whole thing. Within 48 hours, the murder squad were in Porterstown Lane looking for this missing woman.
Now, they had no body. This was a missing woman at this particular point in time. One of the complexities of this case is that there was a car observed with a middle-aged man in it, and it was probably a rather more modern version of the same kind of car made by Ford, a Zodiac or a Zephyr, that some local lads had a rust bucket version of.
Exactly. This car was seen by a number of witnesses. There was a description of the driver. Some of the descriptions had one person in it, another had two people in it. There was at least three people described both the car and the driver, local people who were there at the time. Now, for whatever reason, there was an initial word put out among the Gardaí, keep an eye out for anybody with such a car and ask them to account for their movements. But despite that, there was no further investigation on that line of inquiry.
Now, I remember the Zodiacs and the Zephyrs. They were highfalutin cars when they were new. And it would have been very easy to collate all the Zodiacs and Zephyrs either in Dublin or the county surrounding Dublin, or indeed from anywhere in the country. There would only have been a few hundred at most.
Absolutely. As you say, there are highfalutin car. Some of them were used by for government work and that sort of thing. And exactly, as you say, it would have taken a bit of police work, but you could have investigated that thoroughly. Instead of that, for whatever reason, presumably on the basis of a hunch, the Gardaí who were in there came to the conclusion that this individual was not the one they were looking for. They were talking about three local lads who had come across the lane about from the opposite side of the lane about 15 minutes after Una. They were driving, they all knew Una. One of them was effectively her next door neighbour. They were driving a clapped out Zephyr, and the Gardaí took it into their heads this was exactly where their investigation should focus.
They arrested the lads and they basically beat the lard out of them.
Yes, I mean, I think there could not be any doubt about that at this stage, not only in terms of the evidence was there at the time, but the same group of officers who went on and cases they were involved in later, the evidence that happened is overwhelming.
We're talking about the crowd that were dubbed the Heavy Gang.
Yes, they came to be known as the Heavy Gang, yeah.
And also, ultimately, in the Supreme Court, it was accepted that, in fact, they had been beaten.
Well, in the Court of Criminal Appeal, in this case,
Adrian Hardiman,
in the Court of Criminal Appeal, both in 73 and in 2010, but even in 73, the Court of Criminal Appeal, they suggested that they'd been subjected to very intense questioning, the need for which the judges couldn't see. Yet despite that, the judges decided that because the trial judge had said that admissions they made in custody could be used, and that was crucial to the conviction of one of them, Martin Conmee, for manslaughter. The second guy, Dick Donnelly, got off on appeal on the basis he hadn't made any admissions in custody. But that 44 hours in custody was crucial to everything, because without that, there was no question these fellas had not met Una on the lane that night.
So eventually Una's body was found, so they knew they had a murder on their hands, and it was found in the Dublin Mountains at some point. The three lads then are going to be ultimately, two of them convicted of all of this, but one lad ended up losing his own life.
He did, and what happened was the Gardaí made it plain and they liaised with the Linsky family. On one level, perfectly understandable, the effectively liaising, as we have a Garda liaison at the moment, but they based their investigation to a large extent in the Linsky household. I think there's no question that they told the Linskys they were convinced it was the three of them. The Linskys certainly believed that. As you say, 10 days after Una's body was found, there had been skirmishes between the broader Linsky family and those related to the three boys, and they took Marty Kerrigan up the Dublin Mountains to a spot near where Una's body had been found. And his body was found there within hours once they came back to Rathaut. And there's no question that they did the deed. The only question was whether or not, as they subsequently claimed, they intended to kill him, whether they'd left him for dead, or as they claimed, they didn't intend to do so.
And they thought he'd be somehow picked up. Now, this is before mobile phones, so he's going to be very lucky that anyone would happen across him and help him make his way down. But in any event, he was found dead, and a mysterious cutting to his groin.
There was a wound. It was effectively the pathologist said it was done after death. It was said in the trial, and it was not challenged, that this was an attempt to castrate him or disembowel him. And despite that, the jury quite obviously accepted the three men, who again had been investigated by the same guards who investigated the three who had fingered effectively for Una's disappearance, which was questionable in itself that it was the same Gardaí, but they accepted that they hadn't intended to kill him, and as a result they got a manslaughter verdict and were sentenced to 3 years. And I'd have to say, by any standard, they were very lucky in that respect.
Now, meantime, we have the situation where you've got one dead man and two others who are accused. And then the case kind of goes cold, like no one is interested anymore because it's done and dusted.
Well, it's the country we're living in, Pat. You didn't question authority. The families, Martin Conmee's father and a whole group of people in the Portishead Lane area wrote to the government a number of times, said something terrible has happened here, will you investigate it? But we're living in Ireland.
Like Desi O'Malley was written to.
Exactly.
didn't do anything. Not that it would have been proper, I suppose, that he would
That's
interfere.
The other thing. There was no procedure to do anything because the courts had dealt with it, notwithstanding that it was a hierarchical society. And this was let go. People couldn't even talk about it for years until eventually, much later, Billy Flynn, a private investigator, was retained by Marty Kerrigan's sisters. And simultaneously, Martin Conmean, they are all in it together. They all live together. Martin had his own effort to try and bring it to court. Eventually, in 2010, his conviction was overturned and he got a certificate of miscarriage of justice, and as a showing that the state was responsible. He also received a settlement from the state for the way he'd been treated.
And he was anxious for his family's... all this was left behind and only those intimately associated with would have remembered it. But he was anxious for his own family's point of view that his reputation be vindicated.
Absolutely. And what remains from all of that is the Kerrigan family. And the issue there is Marty died because the Gardaí had him down as a suspect of murder. That suspicion was based largely on falsehoods and distortions. And he died in that capacity. He has five siblings who are now in the autumn of their lives. And the one thing they're looking for is an acknowledgement, an apology, something that the reason why their brother was killed was totally wrong and the state had some culpability for that.
Now, one of the things you point out is that back in that time, the idea of perjury, maybe we're all cynical, you and I now, about people lying in court. It seems they do it all the time.
Having covered tribunals, Pat, now I could write a book on that one.
But the idea that people had to be believed because they swore on oath that such a thing was happening. And what really is disturbing is that the Gardaí who were culpable in this regard, the so-called members of the heavy gang and those recruited locally to be kind of part-time or temporary members of the heavy gang, went into court and lied through their...
Well, it couldn't but have been organised perjury because a huge number of them, and it wasn't only in this case, but in a number of cases, went in and said they did not partake in any violence, they did not witness any violence, they know nothing about maltreatment in custody. And there's a multitude of evidence that simply is untrue, and they couldn't have been ignorant of it, to put it that way.
Now, there is a cold case review. Now, when they were going back for the appeal for Martin Conmee, it turned out so many of the relevant documents to the case had been lost.
Yeah.
And I put that in quotes, or destroyed, or inadvertently damaged.
Martin Conmee began his attempt to clear his name around the early 90s. He retained a solicitor by the mid-90s. Despite that, it did not end up in court until 2010. And a large element of the reason for that is documents were missing, documents had to be sought.
And then the state had the nerve to say, due to the delay,
exactly,
we want this dismissed.
Yeah, exactly.
When the state was responsible for the delay.
The state was totally responsible for the delay. And, you know, unfortunately, having looked at other cases, Pat, that's not unusual when the state when there's attempts to hold the state culpable, particularly for anything that's historic. Files go missing, they're hard to locate. Some people see in that conspiracy, others say it's just complete incompetence. People have to make up their own mind.
So what state is the cold case investigation in now, and what hope that some truth might emerge?
Well, both killings are being investigated. Now, I don't see why Marty Kerrigan's has to be reinvestigated. I don't see why the cold case review has to delay a gesture to the Kerrigan family for what befell their brother. Notwithstanding that, that's the way it is at the moment. They're also investigating Una Linsky, and we can't forget her. Somebody murdered her. Somebody got away with murdering her. And whomever that person did, what was wreaked in that community afterwards was devastating for generations. The chances of finding that person now, you would have to think, are slim. But look, the cold case, to be fair to them, they've come up with other cases going back 40 years. Maybe there's some hope, but it will be extremely difficult.
Well, we're going back 50 years.
50 years in this case. Nothing has been as long as this.
Presumably the person who did abduct and kill Una Linsky was... middle-aged man then?
It's highly unlikely the person would be alive.
But is it possible that they can go back to the tax records of cars registered and put two and two together?
They could. It would have to be a major leap to actually deem that somebody was culpable. You'd want more than just the make of a car at the time. They would have to pull together other things to do that, because that of itself, think about it, to accuse somebody even posthumously as a murderer, you'd want to have a good bit of evidence. Perhaps it can be done. It would be at the other end of the extreme in terms of Garda investigations from what was originally done in this case, if now somebody could be deemed culpable for this. And finally, that Marty Kerrigan will be allowed to rest in peace and not have the stain over him that he was a murder suspect when he died.
Well, the book is called Who Killed Una Linsky? A True Story of Murder, Vigilante Justice and the Garda. Heavy Gang, published by Sandy Cove, which is an imprint of Penguin Books, and its author Mick Clifford. Mick, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thanks, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.